Hello and welcome to LSE Share Talks Conker's Corner. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with David Jones. Now, David Jones is formerly of IG, Index and CMC. He's a very well-known technical analyst, and David is also the author of the book Spread Betting, the Forex Markets. David's well-known and he's a regular contributor to Shares Mag, a magazine that I regularly purchase, and he's there on a weekly basis talking about all things stocks and Forex. You can also find David on BBC 5 Live, Wake Up to Money. Hello, David. You're a busy man. Thank you for coming on here today.
Good morning. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Now, David, that's the intro. You've got, you know, as much time as you want, mate, to tell me about yourself, firstly starting with your background and the dark arts of technical analyst.
I first got interested in stock markets sort of fairly early on, I think back when I was maybe in my early 20s, back in the early 90s. And I found technical analysis by accident, I think, by buying a book. And I did sort of like the idea that there was maybe a shortcut way to trying to find ways of making money in stock markets without having to read lots of books on the subjects. And I started off trading options based on my own interpretation of technical analysis, which was, I think, a bit over-optimistic. But I think where my career really started, I started working for a technical analysis software company in 1995, and they supplied lots of city dealing rooms with their currency technical analysis. So it was then that I did the Society of Technical Analysts exam, and that's like a formal qualification that's recognized in financial markets. And I went from there to work as a currency technical analyst. So my first sort of proper exposure to technical analysis was in the currency markets. And I'd started sort of spread betting back in the early days, really back again, sort of mid-90s, when the spreads were really wide. It was an expensive way of trading. Yeah. And I really developed my technical analysis from then, you know. And as you say, you know, I've worked at CMC Markets, NIG, two of the leading spread betting companies. Now I write a weekly column for Shares Mag. And I'm a big fan of technical analysis, but I also, I think, recognize its drawbacks. I think it's one of these things, like with me in the early days, if you think it's going to be like a silver bullet and you can just sit there and you're going to make money on every trade, every investment, then I think you're wrongly mistaken. You know, I think a lot of technical analysis is it's hocus pocus, maybe. I mean, I stick to like the basic stuff, you know, the idea of trends, support and resistance, that sort of thing. And I don't think your technical analysis approach needs to be massively overcomplicated to try and make money.
Now, David, we have an audience, a global audience, and some people, we're 3 minutes in, are going, these guys have jumped straight into talking about technical analysis, I don't know what they're talking about. So in layman's terms, could you give us a brief snippet as to what technical analysis is and what it enables you to do with the charts and stocks?
That's a very, very good question. I think it's simply looking at the markets in terms of price data. So it's traditionally looking at charts. So you might have a chart of Amazon or Apple or the pound against the dollar or the price of gold, and you're using the past price action, so what the price has done historically, to try and figure out what the price might do in the future. So whether you should be a buyer or a seller. So that's really looking at it in a very simplistic way. Then some people will add, you know, slightly more complicated interpretations of the price, looking at things like moving averages or different oscillators to try and figure out which way a market's going to go. But however you approach it, it really starts off with the price data. So if we looked at a chart, Amazon's a good example, actually. You look at a chart of Amazon over, I don't know, the last 8-9 years. Last week, Amazon hit all-time highs. So the share price of Amazon was at an all-time high, $770, I think. The trend for Amazon is up. So as a chartist, as a pure technical analyst, the question isn't, oh, when's Amazon going to run out of steam? It's, well, the trend for Amazon is clearly up. The market likes Amazon. I want to be a buyer. So we'll look at the charts to try and figure out, hopefully, a good place to get in. a good place to place our stop loss, because again, I think risk management is for me probably the biggest benefit of technical analysis, and to try and figure out using the past chart where the price may end up going.
Superb. Now, everyone's given it, okay, I'm there now. That's brilliant. That's really good. Short and sweet. I love that. Thank you very much, sir. So, David, having done all of that research, now you're looking for the silver bullet. There's lots of people out there still looking for silver bullets because they want to predict the markets. Now, you've ended up working for another company in your time called Predicted Markets. Is that correct?
I did some work with them. Yeah.
And were they selling their research onto research houses themselves, or banks, or investment houses? What were they doing?
It was banks. It was currency trading desks. It's really interesting what they do, because again, it's a slight different twist on technical analysis, and I think it does fit very well with the charting approach. They were looking at probabilities. So let's say the euro against the dollar has gone up for the last 4 days on the trot. Yeah. So one approach is to say, well, okay, over the last 15 years, when the euro against the dollar has gone up 4 days on the trot, it's done that 15 times, but only in one of those occasions has it gone up the next day as well. So there's an approach where you can look at, you know, historical probabilities in the market, you know, and the probability there, for example, is that it's not going to go up on day five. So some people will say take a more probabilistic approach and try and adjust their markets. And my opinion is, you know, whatever works for you is the right. If it makes money, that's the name of the game.
It is. You've got to find your own methodology and the consistency of returns regarding that methodology. Excellent. Okay. You've had such an interesting time, mate. It's brilliant. Right. So how long have you been investing and trading in stocks, David?
I would say now, probably from the really early days when I bought sort of little penny shares, I would say it's probably getting on for maybe 25 years, I think. But using technical analysis, using the approach I use now, for probably the last, 15 years. But so I've been, I think, like a lot of people, you know, an active stock investor for a lot of my adult life.
Okay. So do you remember your first foray into investing, your little penny share that you jumped into?
Do you know, I can't remember the name, but I can remember, the outcome. And I think like a lot of people, you know, when I first started, I subscribed to a tip sheet, you know, and I'm sure we all know there are plenty of tip sheets out there that promise the earth. Yeah. And I think I remember buying a share for about 2.5p a share. And again, I think the mentality is, it's completely the wrong mentality. But when we all start, we think, I can buy Amazon at $770 a share, or I can buy this little tiny mining company that no one's ever heard of at 2p a share. Yeah. And I can get so many more of these at 2p a share. But what happened was the company went bankrupt. You know, so for me, that was a real a good introduction into the risks of investing in really small companies just based on tips.
Yeah, it is a mad psychology, and I must admit, I was exactly the same. You know, with my first £500, maybe that I could get far more from the £500 than I would if I was buying a stock that was £500 a share. What's the point of having one stock and watching it when you can have, a couple of million shares, for the same amount of money? Madness.
That's exactly the point, because you think, well, like you say, if I buy one at £5 a share, and if it only goes up, if it goes up to £6, I'm going to make 20%. But if I buy one at 2p and it goes to £6, I can retire. You know, and it is appealing, but it's completely wrong.
Completely wrong. Thank you for sharing that one. Oh, dear. So unfortunately, that one went bust. So you've had now 20-odd years, 25 years of investing, David, yeah?
Mm, yeah.
And you've got all the skills, additional skills, far more skills than the ordinary investor. So are you now, would you now describe yourself as a low-risk investor, cautious, long-term? What strategy do you have using TA as an additional tool as well?
Definitely for investing, I am a cautious, low risk, long term investor. So again, like a lot of people, I have a pension and I've got ISAs, and the approach I take in there, you know, is to look at shares that have got good solid trends. So I've got no no interest in buying something that's been going down for the last 12 to 18 months. You know, it has to have been going up. Yeah. And also, I think in the low interest environment that we're in at the moment, you know, we all know interest rates around the world are on the floor. But another one for me is dividend yield. So I look at stuff that pays a divvy of at least a couple of percent. So again, my view is, well, if I buy it now, and even if it goes nowhere for a year, I'm still going to make a better turn, a better return than if I had that money in the bank, you know, because I think, again, one of the lessons, probably the biggest lesson I've learned over the years is patience. You know, just because you think something is going to go up or down as soon as you buy it, it rarely happens.
It's true.
So some of the, you know, one of the longest, you know, I think I've got shares in my ISA that I've had for 3 or 4 years, but it took a good 6 months for a lot of them to actually start moving. So the dividend yield side of it is an important one for me as well at the moment. So the trend and the yield for longer term investments, and it tends to be, you know, it's all pretty much blue chips, FTSE 100, FTSE 250 companies here in the UK. So the bigger capitalized stuff. And I think for an investor, there's always plenty of choice every month there.
No, that's brilliant, because I mean, this is the thing that a lot of people miss out on, isn't it? Is the fact that, you know, once you've compounded your dividend, if you've been fortunate enough to hold the stock for 3-4 years, your 3% yield becomes 9% or 10%. And if you're smart enough to actually reinvest that and not take the dividend yield and take the money, you're reinvesting it. So you actually end up with more shares in that company. And then the yield that you're originally getting was 3%, but actually you're getting 9% now on the ones that you've kept.
That's very true. It is incredible. You know, I think like all serious investors should track their investments in a spreadsheet, you know, and it's very easy to do it in this day and age with things like, you know, Google Docs. There's all this stuff out there that's free. And you can see the impact. You know, I would say almost probably getting on for 50% of my profits in recent years has come, you know, from that yield, from just having stuff like you say that's paying out 2-3% a year. If the share price is going up 5-8% a year, it's happy days. It's a cracking return, again, you know, based on the environment that we're in at the moment.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I'm a little bit surprised with regards to your skills and know-how that you've gone from penny shares when you originally started, where almost everyone seems to start, by the way, and now you're saying that you've got essentially 100% of your portfolio within the FTSE 350. Given your know-how, I would have thought you might have been a tad more adventurous. Why so cautious?
That's a good question, and I think for me, I mean, there's my investing side and there's the trading side. So again, like a lot of people, I have a more aggressive approach to currencies and indices, where I'll be in and out over maybe a few days. So I maybe do, I don't know, 3 or 4 trades a month on that. So that for me is the more aggressive side, and maybe I should do more with penny shares. You know, I think there are lots of penny shares that are rubbish, but there are still, I'm sure, some good ones out there, you know, and there are plenty of FTSE 250 companies that one day did start off as a penny share, you know, but I don't think I'll ever have the story of making a, you know, like a 100-fold increase on something, but maybe I should look a bit more at that part of the market.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I fully understand your answer now, because that does make sense, because you're satisfying those urges that we all have for a bit of spice in our portfolio with your trading accounts and your spread betting accounts and the other accounts that you have. That's for your adventurous sort of punting, as they call it.
Yeah.
And you've got your core holdings for your pensions and your SIPP, et cetera, within the FTSE 350, because you're looking so far out and so long term. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
No, that's really, really good. So I was going to ask you the question regarding your sector preference, but if you're covering the FTSE 350, I'm assuming that you cover all bases there.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So I don't want to have too many shares from the same sector that I own. So that is a consideration, but I only ever seem to have, I think, one or two anyway. But and the way I do it, I do a very simple data mining thing every month, normally on the FTSE 350. So I say, right, show me the shares that have gone up for the last 6 months and gone up for the last 12 months. So that's part of my criteria. So that's looking for a trend. Excellent. And showing me the ones that pay a dividend of at least 2%. And normally, you know, out of 350 shares, that comes up with a list, normally in excess of 100 shares potentially, you know, and then it's a question of just flicking through them and trying to find what I think likes a good opportunity in terms of the risk versus the reward.
Excellent, excellent. A little bit of data mining there. I like that terminology. I usually use the term filtering, but I understand that. Yeah. Okay, so you're when you're doing that data mining, what are your you touched on it a little bit, but what are your essential criteria to say, actually, I've not got any of that stock, or I've got some of that stock, but I'm going to buy some more. What pushes you over the buy button, David?
For me, it's the most important thing once I've come up with a shortlist is right. If I'm wrong, how much am I going to lose? So if I look, so let's say I wanted to invest £1,000 in any share, and I say right, if I've got £1,000 to invest, then I don't want to have to lose more than 15% to find out I'm wrong. So again, I'll use the charts and say, well, okay, if, where a recent support level has been at a recent major low. So let's take a share that's trading at £2 a share. And the last time it dipped down to about 180, and then it bounced off 180 and went zooming up. So I think, okay, if I'm going to buy this at £2, if it falls below 180, then I'm probably wrong. My timing is out. So I might put a stop loss, you know, 177 or something. So for me, that's only just over 10% away if I'm buying at £2. So for me, that means that's a potential buy. But if there was something that meant, okay, if I buy it here, but the most recent major low, it was 25% away, then I won't buy it. So I'll keep an eye on it and see if I can get a better entry price. But I'm
So you'll monitor it until it gets nearer to the protected, so you can protect your losses with a maximum amount of gain.
Exactly.
No, that's a good point, actually. I need to add that to my arsenal, definitely. All right. So what has been the greatest lesson you've attained since you started investing, David?
I think it's definitely patience. I think it's something that plenty of us lack, and I know I definitely did and still do, when it comes to investing and trading. I think we do. I think particularly if you read things, you know, like bulletin boards or Twitter, where people talk about, you know, investments and trades all the time, I think you can end up getting a bit caught up in the hype. But even if you don't, even if you take the approach, I've got to buy this today, you may be a bit disappointed that it doesn't start moving as soon as you think it's going to start moving. And I think that the thing I've learned is, just because I've decided it's going to go up doesn't mean it's going to go up as soon as I've bought it. You know, so it's very important to have that element of, you know, wiggle room where you can just sit it out, where you're not, if it goes down 3-4%, you know, you don't need to be pulling your hair out. You know, you just need to say, well, look, it was a sensible decision to do. My stop loss is 15% away. Yeah. I just need to give it time. And again, you know, some of the longer term stuff that I've had, you know, I'm just trying to look at one now, because one I've had for a while is it's RELX. So it's the FTSE 100 stock, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
And I bought that back in 2013, and I'm just looking at the chart now, and that went nowhere for the best part of like 3 months, you know, and now it's been cracking ever since, but it went nowhere for ages, you know. Actually, no, it was April 2013 I bought it. It just slid for a couple of months, but nothing too drastic. And then since then, it's more than doubled in value. But those first 2 or 3 months, it was doing nothing. So I think having the patience just to sit there and not watch stuff every day. If you're an investor, if you watch it second by second, it's not going to make it go up any quicker. You know, it's just, and you just stress yourself out.
It certainly does not work. And like you said, there's so much noise out there, and people willing the share price up on a daily basis. And ramping it, and I was tweeting about that same stock every day. It's like, it's not going to do any good, mate. Just leave it alone. You've done your research. You'd be happy with it. Have the patience. That's very sound advice indeed.
It does make for a much calmer approach to investing, I think. And yet, what you say about the ramping is really correct. And I think some people end up being almost cheerleaders. And it's just you need to, you know, it's just a share. It's not a real living thing. It's a share. You've made an investment. Just sit back and wait and see what happens.
Absolutely. Now, what has been your wisest investment decision to date?
It's quite a boring, sensible one, but I would say it was taking out a pension. I think in my mid 20s, the company I work for, I think like lots of companies, they have a pension scheme. Yeah. You pay in X, they pay in X, or maybe a bit more than X. And I think it was that. I think it's one of those things where I've always paid in over the years. And if I hadn't paid that money in and saved it, I think like most people, I would have found something to spend that money on over the years. You know, I wouldn't have it in a savings account. So even though, you know, pensions do come in for a lot of criticism in this day and age. And we all know the potential pension crisis, you know, here in the UK with the state pension, because we're all living longer. Mm. You know, I think for me, that was definitely one of the more sensible financial decisions that I've made.
No, it's a very, very good decision you made there, mate, definitely. Especially given the examples of what's been happening with the likes of BHS and others of late. Oh, dear. Right. Given the lessons that you've learnt since you started investing, which one would you most like to share with our audience and listeners, David?
I would say I think it's a combination of that patience thing, but also trend. You know, I think with technical analysis and charting, many people can be very dismissive of it, which is fair enough, because there are some people who do see it as sort of crystal ball mumbo jumbo. But I think there's one, you know, markets do trend. You know, however you want to identify the trend, we all see markets, whatever market it is, whether it's the housing market, the price of gold, the price of BT shares, there are trends, you know. And I think if you can avoid going against a major trend, whether that's up or down, you can save yourself so much money. So I would say, you know, again, if you like it, if you think a share is the absolute best investment ever, you know, and everyone's talking about it and you have to get in, but the share price has been sliding, let's say, for the last 12 months, the market has clearly got a different opinion to you. It doesn't mean the market is right, but it's more right than you are at the moment. So have the patience for the trend to turn around. You know, I think, again, from a trading point of view, when I used to work at a trading company, CMC and IG, you'd see a lot of people would bet against major trends. And it's so expensive, you know, people trying to call the top in gold, you know, all that time when gold was just going up year after year. Clearly the last few years it has sold off, but so many people got their fingers burnt. And I think, you know, the dot-com bursting from 2000, you know, people trying to pick the bottom there. Who would have thought the Nasdaq would have dropped, you know, more than 80%? There's no way you would have thought that, but the trend was clear, you know. And I think, again, God knows how much money was lost trying to pick the bottom in that market.
And equally, when people have been trading the likes of Apple of late, obviously the big news this week was Warren Buffett invested over $1 billion in Apple in the last quarter.
Yeah.
And I think the average price was 109 that he bought it at. You know, again, he's got lots of people working for him. He bought it at $109. Actually hit $90 yesterday.
Yeah.
And closed at 93 when the news came out that he bought. So, you know, it's about buying a stock, looking for quality, and looking at the long-term goal of that company as to how it's going to do.
Exactly.
And invariably, if you've got the right company and they actually execute, then you can do well.
And Apple's an interesting one, because actually, I've written about this for Shares magazine this week, actually.
Apple's one,
because it has declined so much. It's declined, I think it's in that 30% from the recent highs. But if you went back, if you go back, I think it's about 2013-ish from memory, it slid back about 40% from the highs and then just went to carry on powering higher. So Apple, from a chart point of view and a trend point of view, that big trend is still up in Apple. So it's interesting at the moment. This does look like a buying opportunity. You know, it's still weak, but it's one of those ones that, just because it's maybe sold off for a few months, the 10-year trend is still up. So Apple's definitely an interesting one to keep an eye on, I think.
I would definitely agree with that. I mean, I've held Arm Holdings since 2008. I've been in there from 108 pence. And I saw that as British version of Apple.
Yeah.
So I've watched the trend. People have gone, Pete, why are you still in that stock? I'm like, not only because of Apple, but because of artificial intelligence, virtual reality, Internet of Things. You know, this is where it's going to go. So you look at the trend, you look at the chart, and Apple will come back. And you don't go throwing £1 billion at something, or $1 billion, should I say, at Apple if you don't believe in the long-term growth of the company. And they'll be absolutely fine, I think.
And it's just interesting just to keep an eye on the trends. You know, I think it goes back again just to think, well, it's not so much. Well, my approach is, it's not so much how good or how bad I think a company is. It's what does the market think, you know, and I want to buy stuff that the market clearly likes, where the trend is up.
Well, that's probably where we differ a little bit, David, because I like to buy some things that the market doesn't like. As a contrarian, I like to buy things what people are chucking out, you know. And I missed the opportunity there with Apple, but I definitely had an eye on it. Similarly with Twitter, I've got an eye on that one as well. At some point, someone's going to be coming in for that, I think.
That is an interesting one because that has been clobbered. So, because again, the fundamentals for Twitter are pretty weak, aren't they? But the share and the share price has really nosedived. But you're right. I think it is. It is one where you could see someone potentially sweeping in and picking that one up, couldn't you?
Yeah. Okay. So we've covered quite a few of the questions here, David. I've got just a couple more for you.
Sure.
Which I'd like to get your level of understanding on. If there was what, because obviously a lot has changed since the 90s, and we've got lots of tech, got lots of noise, we've got social media, which LSE Share Talk are one of the platforms which are trying to engender a bit of change. If there's one thing you could change regarding the investing landscape, what would it be?
It's an interesting question, and there are a couple of things, I think. I mean, the march of tech has been incredible for us and as investors. You know, who would have thought 15 years ago you'd have real-time prices for any market on your phone available all the time? So that's a massive boon, I think, in terms of staying in touch. But also, I do think it's made people a lot more short-term. And I think actually there are some stats on this. I'm sure the New York Stock Exchange have done a study, and there's a chart out there somewhere, average holding period of US shares. And if you look, since the year 2000, it's been in decline. So people...
massive decline, yeah.
They're just trading stuff a lot more. And my background is trading. I'm a big fan of trading. But I think when it comes to investing, I think the problem is because you have, as you say, you have all this information these days. We're bombarded with information and news and prices and da-da-da-da-da. I think people end up being too short-term in their outlook. So even though, you know, we can trade a lot more, we can trade at the touch of a button, that doesn't mean you have to. You know, I think the basic, you mentioned Warren Buffett, you know, I don't think his, you know, he's not sitting there watching the Dow 10 hours a day tick by tick, is he?
And he's
still, you know, arguably even more successful than he was 40 years ago, you know, so his core approach is still very much the same. So I think it's getting the technology and the chatter and everything else to work for us rather than being sucked in by the hype and thinking, oh, I've got to do something. You know, you don't, sometimes the best decision, it's a cliche, but sometimes the best decision is to sit on your hands. You know, you don't need to be sitting there churning your portfolio every month.
Absolutely. And we all know that churning can be so, so expensive as well. And you end up missing out long-term and opportunities. Because I need to ask you this, because this is one of my weaknesses I'm going to admit to everyone now, is that I obviously scale into stocks and I scale out of stocks. But when I've sold a stock, one of my greatest weakness, David, is that once I've sold it, let's say a nominal figure of a pound.
Yeah.
The stock's gone. It's done well for me. I sell it at a pound. I'm satisfied with my return. It sits there for a pound for a week. And a week later, it goes to 105. Then it goes to 110. And it goes to 115. I'm then thinking, I can't buy that back. I'm refusing to buy that back. What's that about?
I think, again, it's psychology, isn't it? It's about how to emotionally involved we get involved with the stock. Because another cliche is that the stock doesn't know you own it. So it does, you know, it's not going up to 105 to spite you, is it? Because it doesn't care. But again, I think it is having like a robotic approach to the markets. Because one I've got at the moment is Pennon Group. And it's exactly that. I sold those about, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago for £6.
Yeah.
And then I've seen them, they've been as high as £9 something lately without me. And I've bought back in at about £8. So again, it is a bit of a, you've got to almost bite your tongue.
Yeah.
Well, if I think this is going to go up, it's ridiculous of me to tie that old investment to what I think I should be doing today. But it's easier said than done, I think, like a lot of things.
I mean, I'm okay doing, if I'm still in the stock, I've scaled out a little bit, and I've got a core holding in it, I don't mind buying back in and adding to my core holding. It's when I've completely sold out that I've had that great reluctance to step over the buy button again. It's mad. All right, so if there was, I've got one more question, and then we can talk about a few other things with you. If you were starting out today in investing, what would you do that you'd not considered or weren't able to do back in the early 90s?
That's a good question. I think I would focus more on bigger shares initially, because I think one of the problems is when we all start going back to what we were saying a few minutes back, we're all drawn to penny shares, and there's definitely a place for penny shares. You know, they're higher risk, bigger volatility shares. But I think for too many people, if they start off investing, unlike me, and you know, and have a bad experience where the first share you buy goes bankrupt, you can end up thinking, well, it's just a like a spin on the roulette wheel. You know, it's just a massive game of chance, and clearly there is chance involved and there is risk involved. But I think if you invest with, if you started off maybe finding your feet with some of the bigger shares, you get a feeling for how markets work, how markets react, without maybe the enormous, sometimes heart-stopping volatility you get in the smaller shares. You know, so you're not going to be buying a Lamborghini after 3 months, you know, if you're investing in, you know, BT Group and Vodafone and stuff like that. But at least you get a feel for how and the, you know, costs involved. Because again, I think that's another thing that people underestimate. They forget about things like, you know, commission and stamp duty and spreads. If you're trading in the smaller shares, they'll often have a wide spread, won't they? So the thing might have to move 15% before you even break even.
So I think
starting off maybe with the blue chips is a good way to get a feel for it, you know, understand what works for you, the approach that's right for you, what sort of research you like, and then maybe you can go off and have your dally with some of the more higher risk shares out there.
No, that's a very, very good point there. I'm going to quote now Robert Rea, the economist and trader from Dow Theory, back to 1887, I should say. No profession requires more hard work, intelligence, patience, and mental discipline than successful speculation. That about covers it, doesn't it?
It definitely does. I think that's also, you know, that's also a big bugbear, I think, of mine at the moment. Even though my background is in the trading community, I think too many people come into, you know, investing, but also trading to a big degree, thinking it's easy money, and it's really not the case. You know, we all know how hard it is to make a decent turn just as an investor, taking a long-term view on stuff, you know, but there are people who come in and think, well, if I can sit in front of my screen for 2 hours a day, I can make 200 quid a day trading Forex, you know, and it's really not the case. And I think it is, but I think we all underestimate just how hard it is to make easy money, if that makes sense, you know, because it is not easy money, because you have to, normally plenty of us will lose money for years.
Exactly. And the communities on Twitter and on bulletin boards are littered with, you know, lots of bodies, you know, floating by who thought they could get rich quick. Now, I've covered all my questions, David, but I wanted to touch on, because I have little or no knowledge of the Forex markets, and I know lots of people in a very large community on Twitter do, and invariably it's the am I right in saying it's the largest trading body in the world, Forex trading?
Yeah, it's the largest market in terms of daily volume.
Daily volume, yeah.
Yeah, it's massive.
So I just wanted to get your understanding of Forex markets, the pros and cons. Just a few lessons, please, if you could, for some of our listeners and people that are considering heading into those sort of markets.
Sure. Let's compare it to maybe trading shares and the benefits of FX rather than trading shares. So with trading shares, normally you've got to pay commission. With FX trading, if you trade with, you know, any of the FX brokers out there, you won't be paying any commission. So the cost of entry is a lot less. Also, because FX is, as you say, such a massive market in terms of volume, the spread, the bid offer spread, is really tight. So the market, you know, only has to move a little bit for you to start breaking even on your trade. So, and that's another appeal. Plus, of course, there's the volatility. You know, even in a quiet day, let me have a quick look what's going on today. Today's been a bit of a busy day, but so today the pound against the dollar has moved about 100 points so far today, and we're halfway through the trading day. We've had a 100-point move already in the pound against the dollar. Yesterday was a quiet day, but it still moved 50, 60 points. So you have the volatility in FX, and most people need the market to move to make money. So that's really the benefits of it as a trading market. The unfortunate reality is most people lose money. You know, if you started trading FX, if 10 people started trading FX today, I could virtually guarantee in a year's time, maybe three of them might have made money, yeah, if they're lucky. Mm-hmm. But seven will lose if they've never traded before. And I think the problem is because the market, because it tends to be a much more short-term focus than trading shares or investing in shares,
yeah.
people approach it with a short-term mindset, so end up getting shaken out a lot more of trades, you know. So yeah, I think you know, they'll have a move against them of maybe a few points, and they'll come out of the market. So I think when trading FX, people tend to be much more susceptible to market noise. You know, it's a brilliant market to trade. And when we go back to talk about trends, you see some fantastic trends in currency markets, because these are, you know, massive economic things. They're not affected by profit warnings. They're not affected by a dividend cut. You know, it takes a major shift in policy normally, or some major event, you know, to change the direction of the dollar or the euro or something like that. So they are great markets to trade. But I think plenty of us trip ourselves up when we start by focusing too much on the noise and not the bigger picture for the market.
Okay. Given what you've said about the trends and all the rest of it, my concern has always been with Forex trading is the unknown unknowns. For example, when the Swiss franc and they changed off the peg, and you know, a couple of companies got wiped out overnight. So my fear has always been, especially because I've considered investing in IG, for instance, and CMC floated last year or beginning of this year, and I thought, is it worth me investing in CMC as an investment long term? And my fear has also been about the regulation and them coming and saying, you know what, we can't have this uncapped positions with traders where overnight their stocks could be absolutely blown out, which is what happened with the Swiss franc not so long ago.
Oh, and that Swiss franc event, that was a horrible event. You know, currency pair move, was it 25-30% in less than an hour? That's unheard of. You know, to move 25% in a year would be headline grabbing. Yeah, but to move that quickly. I mean, that was a black swan event. That was, you know, an absolute out of the blue event. You know, absolutely ridiculous event. But it can happen in any market, of course. You know, the FTSE could halve. You know, it's unlikely, but it could happen. You know, could happen to make that event come true. But I think there are things you can do to protect yourselves. You know, you do have, if you're trading, you do have things like guaranteed stop losses. So if you're really nervous, and it's completely fair enough, if you're new to it all, use a guaranteed stop loss. So even if the world comes to an end, you know where you will be out of your trade.
Yes.
But it's an interesting one. You know, IG has been, I think, a great investment over the years. You look at the long-term chart of IG, CMC, I think they're about 10% higher than they were at the float in April this year. They're good, solid businesses. But you're right, there's regulation is a risk. I think in the UK, it's trading, leverage trading, you know, whether it's spread betting or FX or contracts for difference, it's quite a mature market. And I can't see there being that much changes in regulation. But you're right, that is a risk for those businesses. You know, if things did change, it could severely impact their businesses. And what they want, what brokers want, is volatility in markets. So the worst thing is if markets are quiet. If markets are quiet, you know, no one really trades as much. So I think they are interesting companies, and they've both been very successful. But if you're going to start trading, then definitely the risk of events like the Swiss National Bank, it is a risk. It's a tiny one, but you can mitigate against that as an individual if you want to.
No, thanks for that. I mean, I've still got them on my watch list, IG and CMC. So I that's additional information that I will be using personally, David. So thank you for that.
I should also say that I am a shareholder in IG, so I should declare my position there as well.
Now, I just wanted to close really with you regarding Shares Mag. I've been buying the magazine I'm currently looking to move house in the next couple of weeks, and I was digging through the loft, and I'm a bit of a hoarder when it comes to data and information. I'm a real research and information junkie, and I found some Shares Mag that were dated to 2006 in my loft. And I thought, right, and I'm not going to say who the chartist person was then, but he obviously wasn't as good as you, David. So you currently doing the charts and the Forex bit in the magazine on a weekly basis. Given the fact that the FTSE has gone nowhere for neon 10 years now, what are you seeing in your charting that says actually, we're going to break out of this long-held range that we've been in for the past 10 years.
To be honest, nothing at the moment. If you look at the FTSE 100, you know, like you say, it's trading at this actual minute. It's trading at, 6,180? Yeah. And it was back at 6,180 back in 2007. It was back here. So, we've gone nowhere in nearly 10 years. And if we go even further back, hang on, let's see. How far back can we go? And it was back here in September 2000. So you're right. You know, if you clearly it's travelled a fair bit along the way up and down. But there's nothing. You know, I think the risk is for stock markets. Basically, you know, we had such a bad start to the year, didn't we? For stock markets, you know, down 10% in the first month. Mm-hmm. And even though if you look at the US markets, we've clawed back a big chunk of that. I think stock markets are a bit vulnerable. You know, I think with the concerns about China, the fact that look at the Dow back in 2009 was below 7,000. Yesterday it was 17,700. We've come a long way in US markets. And I think people are a bit twitchy. You know, I think we need to look at a very simple thing about it breaking the recent highs. I think if we saw the Dow above 18,500, so about 800 points higher than it is now, 5% higher, it does suggest that maybe a new trend is underway. But these markets have definitely, I think, struggled, you know, over the last 12 months to make any real headway. And we just need to see those big levels broken. At the moment, you'd have to say there's no sign of that happening.
Yeah, do you think that's to do with the uncertainty of Brexit and potentially US elections? What do you think is holding us back? Obviously we've done well since January, February. Mm. Given the fact we're in June as of a couple of weeks time, so we get to halfway in June. We've got the summer lull. Everyone's away from the screens.
Yeah,
what's going to help us in July to December to break and clear 6,200?
It's difficult. I don't think Brexit has much of an impact on the stock market. You know, I think it's definitely a currency story there. But I think maybe the US elections, you know, you're right. I mean, there's going to be clearly, you know, a lot of some interesting developments going on there as to what's going to happen. But of course, last summer we had that Chinese plunge, didn't we? August last year, stock markets fell off a cliff. So I think it's always a time of year where volumes are a bit thin. And you can get some odd moves. And I'm still invested, but I still struggle at considering how far we've come since the financial crisis, particularly with the US stock market. You know, you just struggle to think, well, it has come a long way. It's not the oldest bull market ever, you know, but it's come an awful long way. What's really going to be the catalyst for markets to go up 20-30% from here before they go down, if sort of thing, you know? So I think it's difficult, you know, looking at the crystal ball to see what the catalyst is going to be. But as ever, for me, it's to do with the charts. You know, it's if the US markets do break out to all-time highs again, then for me, that would signal, okay, you know, it's time to start buying even more, you know.
Yeah. No, that's really good. And I'm hoping so, because obviously lots of people's pensions are tied to and you know, anchored to the FTSE and or the global market. So hopefully we can get beyond 6,200 and everyone will cheer the markets higher once Brexit is over with, etc.
Yes, we'll see.
No, that's excellent. David, we've covered all the salient points now. I just want to plug one more thing in the sense of if you could have a chat with Dan Coatsworth and Stephen Fraser of ShareSmag and tell them that I'd love to get them on this program. Steve is one of my tech gurus that I've followed since he was the editor of the magazine going back to 2006. So I'm desperate to get him on here. So give him a little jab in the arm. Say, Peter wants to talk to you on Conker's Corner, if you would be so kind.
I will. I'll give him
all
a
All right,
match.
Then.
Thanks very much.
David, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you for being on LSE Share Talk Conker's Corner. I look forward to speaking to you again soon, sir.
Thank you. Cheers.
God bless. Bye-bye.